This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington, sitting in for Joshua Johnson today. Here's the story of a groundbreaking medical discovery. Back in 1923, three Canadian inventors discovered insulin, the life-saving hormone produced in the pancreas that keeps your blood sugar from rising too high or dropping too low. One of the inventors, a guy named Frederick Banting, refused to put his name on a patent for insulin. He said it was unethical for a doctor to profit from a discovery that would save lives. Imagine that. His colleagues wound up selling the patent to the University of Toronto for just one Canadian dollar. Well, fast forward to 2019. The price of insulin has skyrocketed in recent decades, from roughly $20 for a 10 milliliter vial of the drug in 1996 to as much as $290 for a vial today. Some diabetes patients need to take multiple vials a day to stay alive, and the out-of-control costs had forced some families to ration the drug, buy it on the black market, even travel up there to Canada, where it was discovered, to be brought back for a fraction of the cost. Now, more than 30 million Americans have diabetes. More than 7 million of them rely on insulin pretty much every day to stay alive. How could treatment for such a common disease be so expensive? Well, we're here to try to answer that question. Before we get too far, we should also note that we reached out to all three of the dominant players on the global insulin market. They are some familiar names. They are Eli Lilly, Sanofi, and Novo Nordisk. None of them provided a representative to come on this show today. All three sent written statements to read on the air. We will get to those in part a little bit later. But the people who did agree to join me are Sarah Overmall. She covers the pharmaceutical industry for Politico. She's here in the studio. Sarah, great to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Dr. LaShawn McKeever is the Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs and Advocacy at the American Diabetes Association. She's also a physician with more than a decade of experience treating diabetes. Dr. McKeever, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Leah Greenside is a consultant in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Her 13-year-old daughter has type 1 diabetes, and she's a participant in these caravans going to Canada to get insulin for an affordable price. Leah joins us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Leah, welcome to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Leah, tell me a little bit about you, especially tell me about your daughter. When was she diagnosed, and what does her everyday experience with diabetes look like?
Yeah, so my daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 6 years ago when she was 7 years old. And she now, 6 years later, is thriving. Diabetes is a very difficult disease to manage with looking constantly at what her blood sugar is and what she's eating and how much activity she has. But after 6 years of managing the disease, it's something that we're able to do fairly well. Ups and downs, of course. But really what the biggest challenge is for us now is navigating the healthcare system and figuring how to afford to pay for her insulin and medications.
Dr. McKeever, what does type 1 diabetes, what does a diagnosis mean? What exactly is this disease, and how does it differ from other forms of chronic illness in the daily lives of people?
So there's a couple of things I want to address through that question. You know, you noted at the top of the conversation that there's 30 million Americans with diabetes. And over, as you said, 7.4 million rely on insulin. So when you think about diabetes, it is a condition in which the body's ability to produce or respond to this hormone is somehow impaired, and this results in the abnormal metabolism of carbohydrates and elevated levels of glucose in the blood. So there's three different types, and there's great variation within each type. But in type 1, for example, the body destroys the insulin-producing cells. So people with type 1 diabetes need insulin to live, and that this is a lifelong, this is lifelong for them in terms of their reliance on insulin. For type 2 diabetes, there are people with type 2 that also require insulin, but in this case, their body is unable to make enough insulin to meet the need. So over time, they may require insulin. Then there's also gestational diabetes, which occurs during pregnancy, where a woman that previously did not have diabetes develops it during pregnancy and may need insulin during that time. So in type 1, you know, as she said, we know for a lot of families this is a huge issue, but it really is a lifelong issue for people who require insulin to live.
Leah, type 1 diabetes is a challenge for you and for your daughter on a daily basis under the best of circumstances. But can you talk a little bit about what this disease has meant for your financial health, for your ability to get the drugs that your daughter needs, and for what that means for you for making ends meet?
Sure. So we've spent as much as $700 a month just for my daughter's insulin. And beyond that, we have to pay for other sorts of supplies. She uses an insulin pump, and that itself is expensive. Then there are monthly costs associated with the insulin pump supplies, their diabetes testing supplies like test strips, and then there's also a continuous glucose monitor, plus visits to the endocrinologist and to the eye doctor. This all adds up to what, for us, I think every year since diagnosis, has been meeting our out-of-pocket expenses for our health plan. My husband and I are independent consultants, and we have our insurance through the Affordable Care Act, and we have a high deductible plan. And so we've reached that out-of-pocket for my daughter of $7,000 a year, usually by the middle of the year each year.
And you can, it sounds like you can count on hitting it every year, year after year, $7,000. There, it doesn't sound like there's a scenario where you have a good year and it's $1,200.
No, I mean, the cost of managing type 1 diabetes is extremely expensive. I think the estimates are around $20,000 a year. And so it really just depends on your insurance, how much of that you as a patient or a family will have to pay. You know, we've had years in which last year, for example, we had another health issue in our family, and between our premiums and our deductibles, we paid a total of $27,000 in healthcare expenses. So as you can imagine, you know, for any family, that's an extraordinary amount of money to try to find. But there are no choices. You know, with my daughter, we know that until hopefully someday there's a cure, we will be paying those kinds of costs to keep her alive.
Sarah Overmall, Politico, how common is Leah's story?
Very common. So one of the biggest things, like she said, besides these out-of-pocket costs that they can expect to hit on a regular basis, there's also the pumps, the glucose tests, endocrinologist appointments. There's so many different costs that rack up. And then that's not even, you know, she mentioned being on an Affordable Care Act plan. There's so many other ones. There's people that are paying out of pocket for the list price, the quote unquote, you know, the public price of this drug. And there's all these other ways that even on Medicare and Medicaid, people are paying, you know, exorbitant amounts on a monthly basis.
We got this from Kay. My mom pays $270 per month for her insulin. It's highway robbery. No more, no less. The company can make it for $6. What's with the huge markup? Sarah, it's the big, it's not $1 million question. It's the billion-dollar question. Why is insulin so expensive? And why is it shot up so much?
Yeah, I think it's tripled since the early 2000s. And one of the biggest arguments that pharmaceutical companies will make is that they have been raising the price steadily because of rebates that they have to pay to payers. And so not to get too into the weeds here, but this is a really big policy issue. When they pay, like, say, an 80% rebate to a payer on a $300 vial of insulin, that means that they're getting $60 back. But it's unclear how much of that is being paid ultimately by a consumer. And so the Trump administration actually wants to eliminate rebates from the system entirely. And then that would mean that a $300 vial of insulin was simply a $300 vial of insulin. But it's very unclear how that will change what pharmaceutical companies will then charge a consumer.
Yeah. So there are federal programs that require, for instance, if you want to sell to Medicaid, where they provide health coverage to poor people in this country, that you have to sell it at a discount because the government has some purchasing power. Drug companies, biologics companies are saying, gee, sorry, we have to sell at a discount to millions, tens of millions of poor people through Medicaid, so we have no choice but to stick it to people with insurance?
Well, what they would say is that they have to offer these big rebates to stay on commercial insurance's coverage lists. And so you can see the case made for why a $300 insulin would have a higher rebate and a payer would prefer that because they're getting more money from that. But again, it's unclear how much of that savings is passed down to a consumer that has to buy this every single month.
There's also a lot of suspicion that the out of control prices for insulin and other drugs too are a form of subsidy. American patients subsidize cheaper prices in other countries. They can't charge $290 in Canada because Canada doesn't stand for it, and Canada has single-payer health care, so they charge through the nose here, through the needle here, to make up the difference. Is that true?
Yeah, and that's a huge issue in Washington right now. A lot of Democrats in the House, progressives, would really like to see more of those sort of price controls you're talking about happen in the American system. They've cited insulin because drug prices are top of mind, but insulin really is the poster child. That is something that progressives want, but it's a complete non-starter for Republicans. It's not something that they can see getting off of the table with the Senate or with the president, really.
We're going to talk a lot more about how this issue interacts with the lives of everyday patients like you with Sarah Overmull, Dr. LaShawn McKeever, and Leah Greenside. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Home Instead Senior Care. Gerontologist and caregiver advocate Lakeland Hogan reflects on Home Instead's mission to enhance the lives of aging adults and their families.
You don't stop living once you hit a certain age. You can still live a rich, meaningful life through your later years. And so we are really excited to be celebrating our 25th anniversary at Home Instead and to be still working towards our mission.
To learn more about Home Instead Senior Care, go to homeinstead.com.
I answered truthfully except for telling them who it was. I did not name no names.
After Jim Reeb was killed in Alabama in 1965, no one was ever held to account.
Finally, the full truth comes out.
I never opened my mouth for nobody.
It's White Lies from NPR.
Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We asked you to tell us your own experiences dealing with diabetes and insulin, and here's some of what you left in our inbox.
My name is Dawn. I live in Indiana.
This is Patrick in Atlanta.
My name is Connie. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
My husband is a type 1 diabetic.
My daughter is a type 1 diabetic.
My doctor has prescribed a long-term insulin, and when I go to the pharmacy to see how much it will be, it's several hundred dollars.
It's always a worry if for some reason he should lose his job, whether or not he'll be able to get his medicines.
When she does not have Medicaid, they will cut her off, and the way she gets her insulin is she asks Facebook friends and family.
There are no other options. There's no low-cost option for this. And this puts me and my health in risk.
It's not his fault that he has a pancreas that doesn't work. People in pharmaceuticals keep prices so high that it seems like they'd rather people die than help them. What about their Hippocratic oath?
Your voices dealing with the high cost of insulin and diabetes in America. Leah Greenside, take me through a typical day, if you would, when you have type 1 diabetes. How many injections does your daughter need? How many blood samples, finger sticks, if that's what she does she have to take?
Yes. So my daughter uses an insulin pump, and she probably gives herself insulin through that pump, on an average day, 6 to 8 times based on what she's eating. So when she wakes up in the morning, we check her blood sugar by a finger poke, or we look at her continuous glucose monitor to see where her blood sugar is. We then make decisions about how much insulin to give her to correct that blood sugar if necessary. We look at her breakfast and figure out how many carbohydrates she's eating and give her the right amount of insulin there, and then try to make a plan for the day in terms of her activity level and other factors that may affect what she needs. It's a real balancing act to try to manage the disease because our bodies are so dynamic and what we do varies so much. And we need insulin to regulate all of our body functions. So, it's all these factors that come together. I just saw somebody post something saying that a child with type 1 diabetes makes 27 decisions related to diabetes in a morning. I don't know if that's true, but it feels right to me. It's a constant management issue. It's also overnight. My daughter's blood sugars can drift high for a variety of reasons or go low. In either situation, we need to assess what's going on and make corrections. Just last night, it was my husband's night to be on call for her. We switch every other day, and he was up last night at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and some other time, I don't even know, because I was trying to get some sleep, correcting her blood sugar because it was high. So just a little snapshot of what it's like to try to manage this disease with a child.
Dr. McKeever, where does insurance come into play here in this unique American system that we have. Is affording insulin only an issue if you don't have insurance? That's not the case for Leah. They have ACA plans with high deductible. Where do people tend to confront the highest costs in our system?
So insurance does play a role. Depending on the type of insurance a person has will determine their out-of-pocket costs. And so some of what you're hearing about people having high deductibles, you know, they have to pay a lot of money out-of-pocket before their insurance actually they're actually able to benefit from their insurance. But Todd, I do want to take a second to pause and back up and just acknowledge those who are writing in and tweeting and sharing their stories. You know, we hear these stories every single day at the American Diabetes Association. And you know, a few years ago, because of the swell of concern and really tragedy that we've heard from our constituents, including providers who also, you know, we haven't mentioned them in the voice of people who are dealing with this. You know, a lot of providers are confronted with this each day, and they see the struggles of their patients and they want to see resolution as well. But the association in 2017 commissioned a working group to look at this issue of insulin affordability. And we met with over 20 entities from within the insulin supply chain. So from the manufacturers to the point of sale at the pharmacy. And we asked them, you know, an array of questions to really try and understand what the issue is. And to Sarah's point, the transparency is, you know, did rise to the top of the list as one of the major issues. We don't know where the dollars are flowing. You know, a lot of those transactions are confidential. There's rebates that are happening, you know, discounts, there are fees that are involved in this. And so, you know, we've really tried to be laser focused on how do we bring down the cost of people with people with diabetes at the pharmacy. So in addition to conducting those interviews and our research on the issue, we released a white paper with recommendations and really what were some of, you know, some of the things that we found, as well as policy solutions. So for example, you know, one of them was increasing price transparency, lowering or removing patient cost sharing. We know that Colorado recently passed a bill that went into law that limits the copay amount for insulin to $100 per month. But again, as you said, it depends on the type of insurance that a person has.
Indeed. Dr. McGeever, transparency is critical and is notoriously lacking in the pharmaceutical game. This is a great time for disclosure. I think transparency is important for anyone who's involved in this debate. Could you disclose to us any relationships, financial or otherwise, that either you or, more importantly, the American Diabetes Association have with any of these manufacturers, whether that's educational grants, direct funding, or anything else?
So the American Diabetes Association receives funding and support from a number of different stakeholders, including those from the pharmaceutical industry. 80% of our funds are unrestricted, meaning that you know, the ADA has the ability to direct how those funds are used. And then there's a portion that are restricted, so they may impact, as you said, educational programs or provider educational programs, but the ADA controls how those programs are executed.
Okay.
So
thank you for that.
Important to note.
Yep, thank you for that disclosure, and I do appreciate it. Speaking of the drug manufacturers in question, three drug makers account for 80% of the global insulin market. We reached out to all three, and here's part of a statement from one of them, the big boys, Eli Lilly. Too many people with diabetes and other chronic conditions have high deductible insurance plans that force them to pay thousands of dollars before their coverage kicks in. Because insurers, including many employers, value lower premiums over low deductibles, some people with diabetes effectively subsidize premiums for the healthy. That's not how it should work. And part of another from Novo Nordisk, while we are accountable for the list price, we ultimately do not dictate what most patients pay for their medicines. That's based on how one insurance's benefits are structured. But as benefits have evolved, there have been unintended consequences causing patients to pay more at the pharmacy counter. You can read the full versions of both statements. They're on our website. They're long, and you can read all of what the pharmaceutical companies have to say at the1a.org. Sarah Overmall, both Lilly and Novo Nordisk are putting the blame on the insurance system. It's not us. It's not the list price. It's this wacky, terrible system that they all know we hate anyway. How about some transparency? Is that right to put the blame at the feet of insurance? Where should it be?
I think it could be put at the feet of both. And actually, what's funny is there was a House congressional hearing earlier this year that put them all literally right next to each other in the same room in front of lawmakers and said, what is happening? And even when they were sitting right next to each other, you would think insulin prices just dropped from the sky.
Sure.
And so, yeah. And so even as they all argue for some sort of transparency, they say not too much because it will make it anti-competitive and because then there'll be price fixing. So they all finger point at each other, but there's also not really a lot of movement on what can happen. And so like Dr. McKeever was saying, besides the lack of transparency, it really comes down to out-of-pocket costs. And that's kind of become one of the ways that people are looking at the easier fixes. Like, let's cap out-of-pocket costs for patients, which we can do more easily than saying, what exactly is happening in these negotiations? What kind of rebates and discounts are you giving to each other? And we can just say, look, patients should only pay this amount.
Leah, I'd like you to respond to this. Sanofi's a big juggernaut in the insulin game. Sanofi believes that no one should struggle to pay for their insulin, regardless of their insurance status or income level. We encourage anyone prescribed a Sanofi medicine that is having financial challenges or trouble navigating the insurance to call the Sanofi Patient Connection, where eligible patients can be connected to the medicines and resources they need. Lots of drug companies do this. They lobby against any price controls, but they do give away some drugs at a discount or for free to people in financial need. Leah, have you ever availed yourself of one of these hotlines? Eli Lilly has one. Have you ever reached out and tried to get a discount?
I did once call Eli Lilly to try to get a discount, and we actually found out that it was less expensive for us to not use the discount and to buy it through our insurance. This was a part of a very long conversation that I had at the beginning of this year. We switched insurance plans, and I needed to get my daughter's insulin refilled. And it took me 15 phone calls or emails over an 11-day period to try to get her insulin refilled, including one to the Eli hotline. But fortunately for us, we had half a vial of insulin that, you know, got us through that period. But 11 days, it's crazy how complicated the system is. So when I hear these calls from the pharmaceutical companies, you know, saying, we have programs to help, I hear stories all the time of people calling the programs and not being eligible or not being able to navigate all the way through to getting the discount at the actual pharmacy counter.
We got this tweet from Jet. I have type 1 diabetes, and so did my nephew, George. In 2011, he lost his job and health insurance. He rationed his insulin and died 2 months later. He was 21 years old. No one should die because they can't afford insulin. Beth tweets, my husband has type 1 diabetes, and he's been that way since he was 3. He'll be 41 this July. Type 1s cannot live without insulin. Please make sure to talk about the pump and how insurance companies will cover pump equipment, but not the insulin or testing materials. We're going to talk about that issue and so many more, including Americans like Leah, who travel to Canada or other countries. We're also going to talk about policy, what the U.S. government can do besides narrow agreements on just insulin to help bring some of these costs down. My three guests will be back with me in just a moment. Stay close. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A.
In the Trump era, the news moves faster than ever, and the NPR Politics podcast is there to keep you informed. Every time there's a major political story, we get our best correspondents together to sort through the noise. The NPR Politics podcast, what you need to know right after it happens.
Well, back now to our conversation on the price of insulin with Dr. LaShawn McKeever, reporter Sarah Obermall, and activist Leah Greenside. Leah, have you ever been tempted to ration your daughter's insulin, give her a little bit less per day in order to make it stretch?
No, that's extremely dangerous to do, and we haven't been in the position of needing to do that exactly. But we've done many things in terms of rationing and saving supplies. So we've reused insulin from her insulin pump cartridge, which is not advised, but we withdraw it and put it into a new cartridge to help to make sure we don't waste any drop. We do things like her doctor has advised her to change her insulin pump site every 2 days. We usually go beyond that to more like 3 days to be able to just have a little extra supplies. We've done things like with her continuous glucose monitor to, there's ways to restart it and use it beyond what it's supposed to be used. And the list goes on. I mean, there's many creative ways that people with diabetes have figured out to try to save.
And we got this message from Rob. Unfortunately, it's not just insulin. The rising cost of diabetes, home testing supplies, food alternatives, drugs, and support care is killing people daily. I'm diabetic, and I'm fortunate enough to have a doctor who's an advocate now, but when I didn't, I would ration my drugs. Dr. McKeever, and I emphasize doctor there, the dangers of rationing. We've heard from so many people who do it. I know that probably hundreds of thousands of people with type 1 around America resort to rationing. What are the risks?
So it is very dangerous if people are put in a position where they have to ration their insulin. In as little as a day, a person can undergo metabolic decompensation, and, you know, it could the ultimate consequence could be death. And so rationing is very dangerous. We know that some families have been pushed to that limit. And this is why we're so adamant that no one should go without insulin because they can't afford it. You know, when you talked about the cost, and, you know, one of the things that was mentioned was Leah's cost of being $800 a month, I believe. We've heard as high as $1,800 a month for insulin. And when you add in the supplies, pushing that number up to $2,400 a month. And this is, you know, this impacts families of many different economic, you know, from many different economic statuses. And we're just seeing people going to extreme lengths to get insulin. And so this is why this conversation is so important today.
Leah, Americans are getting used to hearing scary stories about caravans in this country. You've been part of a caravan of a completely different kind, a caravan headed north to Canada for affordable insulin. I mentioned it earlier. Can you talk just a little bit about that experience and how many trips you've made?
Yes, sure. So we use that word caravan pretty intentionally to help to illustrate the dire situation in the United States. So that was a trip that about six of us went on in early May, and we drove from the Twin Cities here in Minnesota up to Fort Frances, Ontario, 5 hours up through Minnesota, and crossed the border, and we bought a total of $1,200 worth of insulin in a Canadian pharmacy, which in the United States we would have paid over $12,000 for. And I'll say it's exactly the same insulin. Actually, my daughter is using it right now in her insulin pump with no problems at all. It's packaged the same. It works the same. It's just significantly less expensive. There are some questions about the legality of doing this, which I could talk about if you'd like.
Oh, we're going to talk about the legality.
Yeah.
because these types of caravan trips, they have a new name, Leah, but they are not new. There were some hearings on Capitol Hill just a couple of days ago. Republicans and Democrats are joining together to tackle the issue of high insulin prices. Well, we'll see. Here's one member of Congress, Earl Buddy Carter, Republican, wrapping up his testimony in the committee.
I want to congratulate all of you because you've done something here today that we've been trying to do in Congress for ever since the 4 years and 3 months that I've been here, and that is to create bipartisanship. Because what you've witnessed here today is bipartisanship. This is going to end. I have witnessed it. I have seen what you have done.
He sounds excited. Sarah, when I was a younger reporter years ago, there was a congressman called Bernie Sanders, not very well known. He was leading caravans from his home state of Vermont up to Canada. There was bipartisan agreement for something called drug reimportation. It even nearly passed the Senate, where prices are too high in America. Let's make it legal for Americans to get cheap drugs in Canada until pharmaceutical companies come correct. That never happened. This is an old story. What does the law say about what Leah is doing now, and how many Americans are resorting to that?
Right. Well, that is definitely flared up again. Bernie Sanders, who is a little bit more well-known now.
A little bit.
He has reintroduced legislation that would do exactly that on a broader scale, what Leah and her family are doing, but for states and even for the federal government. But it's not anywhere closer to passing.
Sarah, what about the White House? You mentioned that there is agreement because insulin is a poster child. Here is the president talking about the high cost of prescription drugs and says it's something that he wants to tackle.
We will have tougher negotiation, more competition, and much lower prices. at the pharmacy counter, and it'll start to take effect very soon.
Is all of this bipartisan agreement leading to something that's cheaper?
There are a few, well, there's a few things moving. So there's drug pricing packages in both the House and the Senate that could be coming any day now that are supposed to be trying to tackle this on a broader scale. What President Trump was talking about there could be any number of things. The rebate rule that I mentioned earlier that would eliminate that sort of weird pass-through from the system and make it so that that would have to be a discount given to patients, that could drop any day now. That's actually right about to. He's also talked about some things that are very traditionally not Republican ideas, and they've made a few people in his party uncomfortable. But one of them is drug importation. He's backed Florida's plan and said that he wants the federal government to work with Florida on figuring this out. Another one is this thing called reference pricing, tying American prices to the much cheaper prices paid by European countries. Again, this is something that Republicans are a little queasy about. It's something that Bernie Sanders loves.
What about Medicare negotiating for lower drug prices? The president has said in populist speeches that he's for it. Lots of Republicans are not for it. It's not a new debate. The idea here would be that Medicare is so big and strong in the market. I want to say 55 million members, that might be wrong, that they can force drug companies to lower their prices by negotiating on behalf of the American taxpayer. Is that going anywhere? That might help here.
Well, it's, yeah, like you said, President Trump has talked about that, but I think the last time he was really definitive on it was on the campaign trail. And I think people in his party were saying, you know, this is not a policy that we back. So he's kind of retreated on that. It's really something now that is with progressive Democrats, mostly in the House, who are saying that, look, we're not going to sign on to a drug pricing package unless it has powers for Medicare to do this. Because like you said, it's the biggest insurer. And so if it's doing that, that could really bring down costs for a lot of people. But there are questions about how much it really would and which drugs would be included on that. So very recently, as a kind of way to get progressives on board, Speaker Pelosi said, okay, we're not going to only target 25 drugs on this, which was the original plan. We're going to target 250 drugs. The problem is that it's really hard to say which drugs go into that bucket. They are talking about rare disease drugs, cancer therapies that are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars that would go in that bucket. Insulin is 300 or so. So it's not, if we're just going by price, it might not be there. But it is the one that is continually, you know, people can't skip on this. They need that. They need that negotiation.
And what about the states? We talked about Colorado's cap, $100 per month if you have insurance. You said states have different approaches to the reimportation question. What are other states besides Colorado doing directly on insulin prices?
Well, directly on insulin, it's mostly been things like the cap, but on a broader sort of cutting costs and understanding the lack of transparency in the chain, multiple states have looked at their contracts with payers and said, we can't understand why we're getting charged this way. Consumers are getting charged this. We're going to cancel these contracts and either renegotiate them or, like what West Virginia did recently, we're just going to directly manage it ourselves.
And states may continue to grapple with that. It's going to be interesting to watch Congress and whether carving out this one little sliver of the healthcare cost crisis in this country can actually help solve this problem. And then the question becomes, Sarah, if they manage to get agreement and bring insulin prices down, what about the rest of the armamentarium that doctors have to treat diseases? Diabetes is only one disease. Insulin is only one drug.
Yeah, exactly. And even within diabetes, as both Leah and Dr. McKeever have said, there's so many other aspects of it, the pumps, the tests. There's a much broader question about how to manage drug costs in general. And it's only going to become a bigger one because when we get to these really expensive gene therapies and precise medicines out there, we're talking about million-dollar therapies launching. We've got to figure out a better way to pay for them.
I want to thank all three of my guests and the 1A listeners for chiming in on this this very important issue across American healthcare. Sarah Overmall covers the pharmaceutical industry for Politico. Sarah, thank you for being here.
Yeah, it was great to be here.
Dr. LaShawn McKeever, Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs and Advocacy at the American Diabetes Association, also a physician. Dr. McKeever, that's why we were so glad to have you here with more than a decade of experience treating diabetes. Thank you so much for joining us, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
Leah Greenside is a consultant in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Her 13-year-old daughter has type 1 diabetes. She's a participant in these caravans to Canada to buy cheaper insulin. Leah, thank you for joining us and for sharing your story, and good luck to you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Great to have all three of you with us. Today's show was produced very ably by Paige Osborne. It was edited by Miranda Fulmore. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Celeste Headlee's here tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.